If you're just joining us today, we, a couple of weeks ago, started a new series called Distinct. And I said to those who were here on that particular Sunday or were tuning in, that this thing was born in my heart while I was away during the summer. I read a book that really challenged me personally. It also helped me sort some things out in my heart and in my head. And so some of the things I'm conveying to you are born out of what I read, but also what I felt God download to me during that period of time. I want to say to those of you who might be, this might be your first week, I met a number of new people on the way in this morning, and I can't, for the sake of time, go back and kind of redo the last couple weeks we've been together, but I want to encourage you to go online. You can go to YouTube. You can find both the sermons from the last couple weeks on there, and it'll bring you up to speed in terms of what I'm going to be sharing today and in the weeks ahead. I also want to say thank you to the various feedback some of you have been giving to me. As you know, last week I felt like I was plowing ground as I was sharing things with you, and it was helpful for us, several of you, to get back to me after last Sunday and just say, no, we were picking up what you were putting down. It just was a lot to take in all at once. Some have said, would you please leave the slides up there longer? I don't have time to write down everything you put up there on the slide. I'm sorry, we can't do that. But what I have said to a few people is, if you want a copy of my notes, I'd be happy to give them. I've got no secret going on here. You'll have to forgive a lot of spelling errors and incorrect sentences, because I just put it on here as it comes in my head. So nobody fact checks it, or not fact checks it, that's not what I mean. Nobody spell checks it. That's what I meant to say. That's what I really meant to say. Spell check it. Okay, so we have been taking a drone-like perspective of where we're at in our culture, and I've said to you that we've got to know where we're at, and we got to know what we're dealing with if we know how to proceed ahead. You know, one of the things that frustrates me is that people are using strategies and tactics that worked 40 years ago to try to address our culture when things have changed so dramatically in that amount of time, those strategies and tactics no longer work. I mean, people just look at you like you got, you got something wrong with you, you know? And I don't want people looking at the church like that. I don't want people looking at the body of Christ as though we're stuck in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s. I want us to be relevant. I want us to be alive. I want us, nothing's changed about the truth. Nothing has changed, but the way that we make that presentation has got to adjust with where we're at in our culture and in our society. So the last couple of weeks have been introductory in nature. Today I'm going to finish that. Then we're going to start talking about what we believe, what we think, and how we portray that to the culture around us. So permit me, if you would, one last week of sharing some understanding of where we're at. Okay, so the first week we talked about the idea of just worldviews in general. What does that mean? What does it mean for you and I to have a worldview? And how many worldviews are there out there that we're contending with? And so we talked the first week about all of that. Last week we spent time talking about what secular, which is the culture that you and I live in, what secular means, how they look at things, and how that relates to how you and I would deal with that, all right? So today, I want to talk to you about the power of influence. The power of influence. Now, some of you are here today and you're saying, I don't let anything influence me. I just tell you, by the end of my session right now, you're going to be influenced. That's it right there. Now, here's what it means to influence. You ready? It should be here for you on the screen. The ability to affect, to have an effect on the character, development, or behavior of someone or something. Influence. The ability to have an effect on the character, development, or behavior of someone or something. Now, here's the amazing thing. Human beings have an innate sense of being able to influence one another. It's almost like God has baked that into the pie of how we relate to one another. My wife has the ability to influence me. Many of you here have the ability to influence me. I have the ability to influence my wife, my children, my grandchildren, and hopefully some of you that are here today. For those who have done studies about the ability to influence, they have come upon two particular key factors that involve influence. Two particular things. There's a lot of things involved, but two particular things that enable people to have influence on other people. Number one is the idea of relevance, and number two is the idea of prominence. Relevance and prominence. Again, they're right here for you on the screen if you're taking notes. Now let's talk about relevance for just a minute here. Relevance has to do with what the need that we feel, felt needs, all right? In marketing, the goal of a particular company when it comes to influence is to get you to feel the need for what they have to offer. So if a company is out there trying to promote their product, their first job is to get you to believe that you need what they have. You got it? It's called felt need. I feel like I need that, right? Okay, so you may not have known you needed it prior to that moment, but their job is to convince you that you need it, need what they have to offer. When someone is influencing you about something that has no relevance in your life, it will not affect in any way your character or behavior. Does everybody understand what I just said? Okay, so let me example what I'm talking to you about, okay? I do not wear cologne. I have never worn cologne. My wife does not wear perfume. There's been times she's tried it. It makes her dizzy. It makes me dizzy when I smell it, right? So we just opt not to participate in perfume or cologne. So when Chantel 5 comes on, the commercial comes on, because we have no, is it Chantel 5? I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Sorry, Chantel. There's a lady in our church named Chantel. You can tell it has no relevance to me whatsoever. None whatsoever. All right. Now let me compare that to scent-free shampoo. I used to use only in hunting season scent-free shampoo. Pew. All right, so when I see an ad that comes my direction, whether in print or in whatnot, about scent-free shampoo, we're in trouble. Now they're talking my language, right? It influences me to pay attention to the felt need of what they have to offer. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's talk about prominence. We'll get off of that for just a minute. Let's talk about prominence. Prominence has to do with keeping it in front of us. Keeping it in front of us so that in the end, you feel like you've heard it so many times, you've seen it so many times, that it's become norm, right? It's become normalized. You can say the jingle of the ad. You can quote the ad. You know it, right? It's been in front of you so much. If you only are exposed to something once in passing, it won't stick with you. It just won't. So you're not going to see the marketing companies throw one commercial out there and you're never going to see it again. Because they've discovered that if something is relevant and we can put it in front of you often enough, you will buy into that. People are spending billions of dollars. Trust me, they've researched this. They know how you and I are wired and how we pay attention or don't pay attention to what they're trying to promote, all right? Now, just to clarify, people are most influenced. They are most influenced when they sense a message has relevance and they see it often. Got it? Now, if the messages of the secular worldview were irrelevant to people, and if we only heard those messages in passing, they would have relatively no effect on people whatsoever. But that is not what you and I are dealing with. There is a reason why the influence of the secular worldview is so appealing. And that's a semicolon, even to Christians. Uh-oh, it got really quiet. Listen, I want to tell you something, okay? This is going to help you. The reason that the secular worldview and their power of influence even has an effect on us is because they are appealing, I'm going to show you this, they are appealing to the fallen nature in every one of us. I want to read to you from Ephesians chapter 2, 1 through 3. Once you were dead because of your disobedience and your many sins. You used to live in sin just like the rest of the world, obeying the devil, the commander of the powers in the unseen world. He is the spirit at work in the hearts of those who refuse to obey God. All of us used to live that way, following the passionate desires and inclinations of our sinful nature. But by our very nature, we were subject to God's anger just like everybody else. Now, in this passage, we learn that human beings, by nature, are in a state of disobedience to God. That's what I just read to you. That's what Paul wrote. By inspiration of God, he wrote this and told us that by nature, All human beings, right, are in a state of disobedience to God. By nature, we want to go our own way rather than God's way. We want to resort to the authority of self rather than the authority of God. This is the primary distinguishing feature between a biblical worldview and a secular worldview. Wow, it's really quiet. I can't believe it. Now, the major reason a secular worldview is so appealing is that it directly appeals to our fallen, sinful nature. It reinforces the desire of authority being me. Have it your way. To quote a commercial, have it your way. Now, I don't know about you, but I can so much identify with what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 7, verses 21 through 23. Listen to what he said. So I find this law at work. Although I want to do good, evil is right there with me. In my inner being, I delight in God's law. But I see another law at work in me, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner to the law of sin at work within me. Let me synthesize that for you. What that means is that even as God-loving, people-loving Christians, there is still something in all of us that wants what I want. And that's why the secular worldview, which is appealing to that very fallen nature, also has influence in us. Even as born-again believers, there is a law or principle at work within us that even though we love God and His Word, there is still this thing in me that wants what it wants. This desire to be autonomous, self-governing. That's why Paul, in his letters, repeatedly speaks of one that we must die to ourselves. You see, most of evangelical Christianity has invited people to come on board the Jesus train by saying to them, if you embrace Christ, He will give you life. That is the message. But the other part that we don't talk about is, if you want to follow Jesus, you have to deny yourself. You have to deny yourself. One should ask the question, why is the secular worldview so influential? I'm going to try to answer that for you in the few moments we have together, because it markets its brand to the sinful human nature of ourselves day in and day out. It never ends. It's being put out there all day, every day, and that's what we hear. That's what we hear. We hear it again. We hear it again. We hear it again. And here's the messages that it sends to us. There are four relevant things that they speak to us that our ears sadly perk up to. Are you ready? Number one, that feelings are the ultimate guide. I'm going to go over these real quick, four of them. Number one, feelings are the ultimate guide. Number two, happiness is the ultimate goal. Number three, judging is the ultimate guilt. And God, number four, God is the ultimate guess. This is what is being told us day in and day out. This is what they are selling. I want to start by feelings are the ultimate guide. You see this played out in our secular culture by people encouraging others to follow their hearts. Follow your heart. For example, if you do a Google search of follow your heart, here are some quotes you will find. Here's what Beyonce said. Anybody heard of Beyonce? Beyonce says it this way: I don't have to prove anything to anyone. I only have to follow my heart and concentrate on what I want to say to the world. I run my world. That's Beyonce. How about this one? This is, the author is unknown. Follow your heart because if you always trust your mind, you will always act on logic, and logic doesn't always lead you to happiness. How about this American actor? His name is Eric Mabius, I guess how you, he says this: you do have to follow your heart. Otherwise, you're living a false life. There it is, right there. All of these messages assume you should be led by your feelings because feelings are the most reliable guide concerning what you should do in life. This is the ultimate appeal to self because only you know how you feel. Only you can guide yourself if feelings have the authority. No one can tell me what I should feel or do. I want to touch on each of these quickly. Number two, happiness is the ultimate goal. In a secular worldview, happiness in life is the ultimate goal. This falls perfectly in line with a worldview rooted in self-authority, because happiness is subjective and it is based on our old friend feelings. Feelings. In this secular worldview, the only measure of life being successful is whether a person has been in touch with their feelings enough to know and pursue what would ultimately make them the happiest. You do what you want to do. This is very sad. I'm sorry I have to tell you this, but a lady by the name of Glennon Doyle, has anyone ever heard of her before? No? Okay, she was known, I guess, in the blogger world as the Christian mom blogger, right? But not long ago, she left her husband and father of three children to pursue a same-sex relationship. Her core message now to others. Now, here's Christian mom blogger, right? That means, I don't know what a blogger, all a blogger does, but they tell you what they think, right? So here was a Christian mom blogger telling from a Christian worldview point of view what she thought about life and so forth and so on, has now shifted gears, right? It's no longer, that she left all of that, and this is what her message to others is now. Break free from whatever constraints you've been conditioned to think you have and embrace your inner wild side. If you do, this is what she's saying now, if you do, you'll be happy. You'll be happy. She wrote a book called Untamed, and it became a New York Times bestseller. This message of happiness being the ultimate goal resonates with our sinful nature, because that's what we like to hear, right? I want to be happy. Number three, judging is the ultimate guilt, and by guilt I mean sin. Judging is the ultimate sin. The first two sales pitches that I just gave to you go to the issue of how we should navigate through life and where we are looking to navigate to, which that being happiness. This third sales pitch from a secular worldview is about how we relate to others along the way. They tell us, go ahead and follow your heart and pursue your own happiness, but don't stop along the way and suggest that someone else pursuing their heart and pursuing their happiness might be wrong. Not allowed to do that. Questioning the path or nature of someone's happiness in a secular worldview is strictly forbidden. It is seen as judgmental and even being equated with hate. Folks, I don't know if you're picking up what I'm putting down. This is what we are contending with right now. This is what we are dealing with out there. That you can't tell another person what they are or aren't doing is wrong. You just can't say that. And if you do, then you are hate. You are full of hate to do that. We've got to figure this out. There are so many references of how this plays out, this judging being the ultimate sin. In that book I referred to you in the very first week, Faithfully Different, the author uses the example to example this particular point. She uses the issue of homelessness. You might assume that any organization dedicated to serving the homeless might be looking to help a person deal with maybe an addiction or whatever they're dealing with so that they can become a contributing member of society and have a better life. But many such organizations in the times that we are living have adopted what's called a harm reduction philosophy. Here's what that means. How does this non-judgmental philosophy work? Instead of influencing a person to pursue a healthier lifestyle, these organizations instead pass out items that will make their lifestyle of addiction and brokenness, instead of seeing it disappear, they actually provide them with paraphernalia to allow them to stay in the situation they're in. And this is what they said. This is what organizations sometimes say. They say, this is where love meets the streets. Harm reduction. I don't even want to go into the details of some of the ways that they try to help people continue to get their addiction satisfied, but their veins have collapsed. They use it involves an orifice in your body, and I don't even want to talk about it. But just stop. The thoughts of it is like, you may be like me saying, "Where in the world? Where is the? What is the world coming to?" But this philosophy that I'm talking to you about is perfectly consistent with the secular worldview, where love means affirming whatever journey a person chooses to take. You have to say, that's okay. Our fallen human nature does not like being told it's wrong. You don't like being told you're wrong. I don't like being told I'm wrong. That's why a lot of times people don't like reading the Bible. Or all they want to do is turn to Psalms. Sing me sweet something. Because when I open up the Bible, I usually come away quite convicted by what I just read. And that's after living 50 years as a Christian. I'm like, dude, I'm not there yet. Right? My human nature doesn't like that. It says, you don't want to read that junk. You'll come away feeling convicted. We don't want that. Number four, God is the ultimate guest. Not guest. Guess. So where does God fit into this, to the influence of the secular worldview? In a secular worldview, God is not necessarily ruled out of the picture. In a secular worldview, what is ruled out of the picture is that we can know for sure who God is and what he has called us to. What this leads to in the world that you and I find ourselves living in is two parallel paths. They're both headed in the same direction. You can take either one. I'm not talking about a Christian one. I'm talking about within the secular worldview, you are allowed to go down one of two paths. One is to say, the one is to say that nobody can say for sure which God is the true God. So you're free to pick whichever one you want, whatever religion you want to follow, just as long as it does not call you to sacrifice yourself. You can do that. You can do that. This is perfectly at home in secularism because you're following your heart and seeking your own happiness and not judging those who might see it differently. The second path is also an apt one that people take. But this particular path has a little bit of take on things. It says that belief in all religions is false. You don't have to believe in any religion because they're all whacked, right? On this path are those who would influence others to believe that there's no good reason to believe that God even exists. As I said, both roads are free to be taken in a secular worldview because both roads subscribe to an uncertainty about God. Neither one of those paths contradicts the idea that God is the ultimate guest, so we are still free to be in charge. Now, just a concluding word about this idea of prominence. Remember, the one is relevance. If we're going to be influenced, it has to both be relevant to us. And what I'm suggesting to you is the secular worldview, the messages being propagated, the way that they're trying to sell it is to sell it to yourself and get you to buy in. Because I'll just say it this way. If yourself is still intact and you try to put a little layer of Jesus over that, it ain't going to matter because yourself is going to bleed through. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. You can try to layer it with Jesus, put a little Jesus in there, but self will still bleed through. Now, a word about prominence. Do you remember I said to you last week that I feel like, and I'm just telling you my gut feeling here, is that there is like this acceleration going on. Like the warp speed, the speed at which things are changing, you could say degrading. It just feels like it's at warp speed. So I asked myself this question. I asked myself, you know, what has changed? What has taken place that would cause for the acceleration of this secular worldview becoming the, as we saw the first week, the norm view of our culture? How did that shift? How did that change happen so rapidly? Now remember, this idea of prominence is to get others to buy in. Now, call me old-fashioned. I am old. And I have some fashion, but I don't wear perfume, cologne, whatever. Call me old-fashioned. But the one thing that I can point to that has caused for the secular world view to spread exponentially is media. the secular world that, now I know right now, I just said to all of you who are younger than I am, all of you millennials, all of you, what are millennials? Gen Z, Gen X, Beta. I know all of you that have literally grown up with all that. You're cursing me out right now. I know that. But I'm just asking the question, how are they getting the word out there, so to speak, with such, may I say, success? What I'm suggesting to us this morning is that the secular worldview is constantly being propagated through various media outlets. For example, you can hear a secular worldview bleeding out and through on almost every television show that you watch. It's just bleeding out. It's just coming out. It's coming through. And listen, remember, I've said all of us in here, like Paul in Romans 7, all of us are battling that self, spirit, flesh, spirit thing. We're all battling that, right? And so we give ourselves to a medium that is promoting the self being in charge, right? It's hard for us not to be influenced by that. So I'm suggesting, I've seen it with my own eyes. I'm not just making it up. You can hear it bleeding out through television shows. You can hear it bleeding out in news outlets. Yes, you can. Ads on TV. And last but certainly not least, social media outlets. Now, as most of you know, and I know my time is short, so I'm not going to get on a tirade here. Oh, man, I'm doing really good. Did you see this? You were all worried about it and everything. Look at it, I'm doing really good. I got time to blather here. All right, now. All right, so listen. All of you know back, Facebook started, all that stuff. And I opted not to go in that direction. I said to you from this spot, for me, my soul just can't handle all that. I just can't handle all that stuff. I'm like, I'm already, I don't need any more thing going on, right? But From what I've heard, in talking with people who are involved in those platforms, is that there's a lot of unrest and a lot of complaining and a lot of messages being sent that I'm suggesting to you, that they are coming from a secular worldview, not a biblical one. So I already feel like I get inundated with that enough. I don't feel the need to give myself to more of it. If I need to show some pictures of my grandkids, I'll take a couple pictures, go down to Walmart, have them print them out, put them in an envelope, and send them to you. No, I'm just joking. I won't do that. All right? Now, here's the thing. People are more tuned in to these mediums than at any other time in history. Right? Like, you can go to the remotest place of Africa right now. Forget about our country for a minute. You go to the remotest places of Africa, you will see a guy on a cart that is being pulled by an oxen, right? There goes the guy on the cart. He's dressed in woo stuff. He's on the cart. He's being pulled. It's a wooden cart with wooden wheels being pulled by an oxen, and he's on a smartphone. Dude, there's something wrong with that picture, right? Now, in Africa particularly, the government said, we want to make sure everyone has one of these. And their idea was, we're going to give everybody one of them. Then they have to go to a store we set up to buy minutes in order to put on the phone so that they can do what they want to do. And they've created businesses, right? Sounded kind of good on paper. But at that moment, they are exposed, whether you like the thought of it or not, to the propaganda of a secular worldview. There it is, right there. Secularism is everywhere we live, work, and play. And we who are supposed to be deniers of self had better pay close attention to what we are giving ourselves to, because influence and the power thereof is a very real thing. I hear Christians buying into the feelings sales pitch. I've heard Christians say, well, God wants me to be happy. Like that's God's ultimate job in life, is to make you happy. I hear Christians support the idea of happiness being their ultimate goal. Christians saying that there's no place to make a judgment about things. And sometimes I hear Christians confused about what I would call basic convictions about God. The secular worldview is not just out there, it's in here. And it would serve all of us well to get some clarity on all of this. As I said to you a moment ago, no amount of layering of Jesus will undo a self-entrenched self. Jesus said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself. God has always had it in his heart to have a people who are distinct. Distinct meaning distinguished as not being the same, not identical, separate, dissimilar. I want to pray for you and me. Lord, it's just not in our day, in our time. The fact that Paul wrote what he wrote 2,000 years ago, there was this influence of the world has been going on since the world. But we have found ourselves in a challenging season here. We find ourselves, Lord, watching as lives are being destroyed, and rather than people being concerned about it, they seem to be championing it. They seem to be applauding it, all in the name of self being in charge. Lord, I'm asking for, I pray for them. I pray for people in general, Lord, that they would have a wake-up call. But I'm praying particularly for your church, Lord. Those who call you by name, those who say you are Lord and Savior of their life. I pray that we would have the discernment, that we would have the keen awareness, that we would be like those men of Issachar, Lord, who were known for their discernment and would know when we're being sold something that tickles our ears, that gratifies ourself, that we would be utterly aware of when that's taking place, and we would take appropriate action in that moment, Lord, that we wouldn't just give ourselves to it. Make us wise as doves, or wise as serpents, and harmless as doves, as we look to be your salt and light in this world for such a time as this that you've called us to live in. Help us be bright. Help us to be bright, that the whole world can see that there's something different in me. That is my prayer, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.